This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Baseball 18, which is available now. Worldwide, the follow-up to the 2016 Metacritic PC Game of the Year, Out of the Park Baseball 18. It's back. It is better than ever. It is jam-packed full of all sorts of cool new stuff, as well as the award-winning gameplay that has captured the hearts of hundreds of thousands of fans around the world. Out of the Park Baseball is the deepest, most authentic baseball strategy game that you can possibly get. It's got new for this year, of course, the 2017 rosters for all the major league teams and the minor league teams. And by the way, we'll make sure they get updated along the way as all the minor league seasons get started. It has got the Negro League. So the very first time ever, you can go back in time and you can right the wrongs of baseball days past and simulate all sorts of cool what-if scenarios when you got some of the great Negro League players against some of the Major League players of not only that time, but of today or before then. The possibilities are endless. There's just so much happening in Out of the Park Baseball 18. Just trust us when we say that if you like baseball in any way, Out of the Park Baseball 18 will delight you. Check it out today. You can get it on Steam now. It's out there. It's available on Steam. And you can also get it directly from OOTPDevelopments.com. And if you want 10% off, just use the code PRESS18 at checkout and you get 10% off that. Out of the Park Baseball 18, available now, $39.99. Get 10% off with the code PRESS18. Follow up to the Metacritic PC Game of the Year last year. We're so excited. The team has put their heart and soul into this year's game just like they do every year, and we know that you'll love it. Enjoy the show.
Well, it's officially spring, and we're in the midst of what's basically the second busiest time of the year for sports video games. Independent developers have helped in that regard with a number of console and PC offerings that range from arcadey hockey to ultra sim management games. And there's, of course, the big one, MLB The Show, which is now just days from release as we record this. Welcome to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Weedeye, Pasta Padre. With me is Rich Grisham, and in this episode, we're going to briefly discuss anticipation around MLB The Show 17 and the possibility that a new basketball league would make sense as an alternative product on the marketplace. Then we've got an interview with the creators of Disc Jam, which is a fantastic new game out on PS4 and PC, maybe described best as a mashup of tennis and air hockey. Before we get to that interview and everything else, Rich Grisham, it's been a while since we were on together to talk, so what's been going on for you, gaming or otherwise?
Oh, man, lots of gaming stuff. Some sports gaming, some non-sports gaming. I've dabbled a little bit in Mass Effect Andromeda thanks to EA Access. I've been playing a ton of Ratchet & Clank, the new one on the PS4. Not new, but you know the latest in that series came out last fall. It's so fantastic. And I also, after winning the treble in Pro Evolution 2017, went back to EA Access and had a bunch of hours left and started playing FIFA. And boy, FIFA's a lot different than Pro Evo. I mean, wow, a lot different. And it's, I can't like describe the gameplay differences. I can just tell you that I literally can't score. I just can't do
in
it.
FIFA? Like,
in FIFA. I'm just... I mean, I wasn't in my first season with Everton. I wasn't particularly good. I got better as the season went on, and I made a couple of transfers and got some better players. And I tell you, I'm probably 12 or 13 games into a campaign with Everton, which is pretty much the same Everton squad that I started with in Pro Evo. And I'm literally last in the Premier League. I've scored maybe 3 goals in like 12 games. And it's just been a complete disaster. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't maintain possession of the ball.
Yeah.
I can't score. I'm not like losing 5-0, but I'm losing every game 1-0 or 2-0. And it's been so interesting to sort of compare and contrast the two. I'm not saying anything bad about FIFA. I'm just telling you, I can't score. I cannot score. And granted, Everton is not a top tier club, although they are actually 7th in the Premier League right now and have been playing great. You know, but they're not like a Barcelona or a Man City or Chelsea, or you know, they're not a super club. So you know, you're already sort of not playing with the best players in the world. But they got some good players, and boy, it's just it's been a crazy struggle with FIFA 17. And I'm not even mad about it. It's just bemusing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just bemusing how terrible I am at it. After three seasons, just dominating against the CPU in Pro Evo.
Yeah. Well, I can understand that as you know, similar as often compared those two games are, Pro Evolution and FIFA. You do have to play them different ways, and
yes,
CPU does play different ways. They do have certain aspects that they're stronger at than the other, or things that you can exploit a little better, and not even just exploit in a bad way. I just mean exploit as far as take advantage of. But you know, it's very different experience, especially if you bounce back from one and one to the other, even with comparable control schemes and everything like that.
Yeah, so I'm waiting when I used up my EA access time. I had like 6 hours left on it when I went back in, and I'm debating when and what to do with it. Like when it comes in the vault, I will definitely when it shows up in the vault, I will fire it up again. But I'm debating whether I restart my season or whether I keep on going, because there's a very good chance of me getting relegated, which would be an interesting story. And again, it's not, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I was just bad at soccer games overall. I remember 2 or 3 years ago, I had like an ongoing tweet, Twitter, season going on where I was trying to maintain relegation, and I ultimately did and then got better. So yeah, but boy, it just looks and sounds so great. FIFA does. It just looks and sounds so great. I want to love it. I want to like it. I want to be able to score. I don't need to win the Premier League, but it would be nice to score a goal every once in a while.
What about the rest of your time, Rich? I know you're a busy man.
Well, you know, obviously, Out of the Park Baseball 18 is hitting this week. We've been we released the beta earlier this week to people who pre-ordered it, and it goes live on Steam today, the day that we're talking, Friday. So it's global, it's worldwide. So I've been obviously helping out with that, and that's just, you know, it's Out of the Park Baseball. It's just this crazy rabbit hole that you get into, and it's hard to get out of, but it's fun. I am stoked for MLB The Show. That's what I'm waiting for, man. Like I'm very excited for the new MLB The Show to be on my PlayStation 4 on Tuesday. I have pre-ordered it from Amazon probably the day it became available for pre-order. So I got the nice Amazon Prime deal, and I'm expecting it to be on my porch on Tuesday, even though I'm flying to Dallas on Tuesday. No, I'm flying to Dallas Wednesday. So yeah, I will get to play it on Tuesday night. Be away for a couple days and looking forward to experiencing as much of the show as possible, because what I've seen of it just looks awesome.
All right, so let's take a couple minutes. I don't want to go too much into this, because the next couple podcasts are going to be show heavy. Next week we'll probably have kind of an initial impressions, based on most of us will only have played for a few hours or, you know, a few days. Because review copies haven't gone out yet. I'm not sure if they're going to be out before release day. Just give me some high-level thoughts here, Rich, on what are you most looking forward to out of MLB The Show 17 when it comes Tuesday?
Well, it's going to sound silly, but what I'm most looking forward to is doing exactly what I did last year, which is starting up with the Mets franchise, playing a full season, doing the player lock for the first 5 to 6 innings, and then opening it up for the remainder of the game. And over the course of 3 to 4 months, mostly on my treadmill and then sort of late at night, you know, a half hour before I go to bed, just playing through an entire season of the show. And that's what I'm most looking forward to. Like, I know there's some cool new modes, and I know Road to the Show has got some RPG-ish elements, some things that we have been sort of asking for, hoping for years. So I may give that a shot. But my problem is I just love the gameplay so much, just the regular gameplay so much. It's going to be really hard for me to pull myself away from a way to play the franchise mode that I just know I love. You know, I always sort of say, all right, I'll try Road to the Show, or I'll try Diamond Dynasty, but I just keep getting pulled back into something that it just feels so good and plays so well. I mean, we've spoken at length. The batter pitcher battles are just so tight and so well executed. When you get to the seventh, eighth, ninth inning of a close game, getting that right lineup selection, you know, getting your right pitcher on that hitter in the spot, warming him up in the right time. You know, when you're batting in a close game in an important at bat, you know, waiting for the right pitch, getting that pitch, all those things that the show does so well. I'm just excited to see how they've improved the little things this year. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, for me, you know, it's funny you say basically the same things as last year. The show as a series has probably been the most consistent sports gaming franchise around, and it's also the most predictable. You know, that has its advantages and disadvantages, but for you, because what you like is really good about the game, that's great, and there's other areas of the game that maybe could use refreshing, and you've seen that already with Road to the Show. They've gone a little bit outside of their comfort zone doing the story-like elements in Road to the Show, so I'm definitely interested in getting into that. But for me, one of the biggest things is actually something that a lot of people would probably consider minor, but I don't, and that's things like having more uniforms. In the past, they've been restricted to a certain number of uniforms per team, and they've been missing a bunch of uniforms that were worn by teams regularly. And as a Mariners fan, like missing the Sunday home uniforms, which are
sure
the best ones. And then there's also the improved faces and stuff. So for me, it's kind of the authenticity. And the show's always done a really good job with authenticity, but then there's been a handful of things that kind of stood out that needed work, and it looks like they're getting to that now. And that's probably because the PS3 version is gone, and they're able to put more resources towards PS4 and aren't constrained by some of the things that were was affecting that older version of the game. Diamond Dynasty, of course, I got big into Diamond Dynasty last year.
Yeah,
I've added a lot of good stuff. There's one thing I really hate about what they've done with Diamond Dynasty this year, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more in another episode, along with TJ and everything. But I'm not pleased with the decision to take away the ability to see what handedness of the opposition's pitcher is before you go into a game.
But you understand why they're doing it, though.
Well, I understand why they did it, but it was far from the best option.
Okay. What would you have done?
So the issue has been that people would go in and they'd see, oh, that person's got a left-handed pitcher. All my good players are left-handed hitters, so I'm backing out. So you either lock in the game at that point where it presents the team to you, you're locked in, and if you back out, then you get a loss, or you have, but really the best option is to have multiple lineups. So you don't even need to see the handedness of the pitcher, but you give us the ability to set a lineup against righties and a lineup against lefties, right? So then you go into the game and it just automatically chooses your lineup based on who you're playing, and then there's no backing out of the games at that point. But what happens here is they've essentially negated the usefulness of a large portion of players. Like, one of the great things about Diamond Dynasty last year, I thought, was that there were so many players, especially with Inside Edge, that could be relevant, that you would want to put on your team, because you could platoon them. You could say, all right, well, I'll use this guy against righties, I'll use this other one against lefties. Can't do that now. So there's a lot of players who are good against a certain hand and not good against the other, that you can't risk even putting in your lineup anymore. So I think that's really going to actually hurt the player pool, at least at the beginning of the year. Now, when you get into all the better players, when you've played for hundreds of hours and you've spent hundreds of dollars for, like some people do, it may not matter as much. But yeah, that's my biggest issue there.
Now, do you think that, silly question. Do you think that they could? Of course they can. It's they can do anything if they want to, relatively speaking. Do you think that they're going to sort of take an approach where if this isn't working after the first week or first month, or first 6 weeks or something, that they might make an adjustment to that? Because, you know, one of the nice things about modern gaming is that you can literally in real time look at the analytics, see what people are doing, see where people are bailing, see where people are sticking with things. And if for whatever reason this turns out to be something that looked good on paper or on a whiteboard, but an execution failed. Could you see them reversing their decision and putting it back to the way it used to be, or making a different sort of change to try to fix the problem that they were trying to solve in the first place?
Based on their track record with post-release support, I would say no. Okay. They haven't ever really done things like that, quite like that. That seems like something they would have had to plan ahead for and work in ahead of time. And I think they probably, I think they have to know that it wasn't the ideal solution, but they thought they had to do something. And if they had an opportunity or more time or more resources, they may have been able to do it differently. But we'll have to see. I mean, I don't know what the reception is going to be like. I just feel like it's definitely going to hurt the enjoyment in some sense and make a lot of cards kind of worthless. So,
well, nothing is probably, and I don't say this in a cynical way, not at all. In fact, quite the opposite, right? But at this point in time in 2017, I would venture to say that nothing is more important to MLB The Show than a successful year of Diamond Dynasty. So I will be surprised if they don't do everything they can. If there is a significant negative backlash or a dip in users, I'll be very surprised if they don't take measures to address that if those things happen.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be interesting to gauge how that goes over. But again, there's a whole lot to Diamond Dynasty more than just that. So we'll just have to see. That's going to be a week or so before we get a good feel for that and what impact it actually has on the games and the way people construct rosters.
Hey, everybody, we're going to take just a moment to thank one of our sponsors tonight. It is Blue Apron. You guys know Blue Apron. They have sponsored our show a number of times, and they're terrific. I mean, they have incredible home cooking available, and it's never been more attainable thanks to Blue Apron, because for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron delivers easy-to-follow seasonal recipes along with the right pre-proportioned ingredients right to your door. You know, you got no more overspending at restaurants or high-end grocery stores. With Blue Apron, you can prepare delicious, memorable meals yourself in under 40 minutes. You know, not to mention, Blue Apron has partnered with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States to ensure that all their ingredients are of the highest quality. And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of ingredients required, they're actually reducing food waste. And here's the bottom line is it's delicious, quality food that you can feel good about. I've used it myself. My family and I have cooked. My son and I have cooked some stuff. I'm not a cook, but they made it, I don't want to say they made it easy, but they made it enjoyable to produce a quality meal. They made it easy with the fact that they give you exactly what you need, but it's still cooking. And that's actually kind of a cool thing. So, you know, some of the meals that are available in March include salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple, vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips, or spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. This is legitimately good stuff. So check out this weekend's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/pressrow. So again, blueapron.com/pressrow. That is how you will get yourself a delicious set of Blue Apron meals, three of them free with free shipping, and you will also help the Press Row podcast. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. I've used it. It's really good. Trust me on this one. That is blueapron.com/pressrow. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
One other thing I wanted to get to, Rich, before the interview is I'm curious because it came out today that among the games EA is showing at their EA Play event this summer, you know, there's the Maddens, there's the FIFAs, but they're also apparently going to show NBA Live, or at least they're planning to show NBA Live. But what I thought was interesting is we've got the ramping up right now of this new league. This new 3-on-3 league called Big Three. Are you familiar with it?
I am.
Okay. So for those who aren't, it's a league of they're putting together teams right now. They're going to do a combine, essentially. They're going to do a draft. And it involves retired NBA players. Names like Allen Iverson are involved. And Ice Cube actually had the idea for all this and put it all together. And some of the rules are interesting. Some of the structure is interesting. and the personalities are interesting. So I looked at this, and I did a quick article on the possibility of it, and I thought, wouldn't this make for a good alternative basketball game on the marketplace? It's different. It's different than 2K. It takes place in the summer when no other games release, and it's got a bunch of players that people have fond memories of, and it's got rules like four-point shots, Rich.
Yeah, and there's some potential pros and some potential, I don't want to say cons, but potential concerns, right? The pros are easy. Three-on-three basketball. It ain't two-on-two NBA Jam, but three-on-three is pretty close to that. There's a lot more space to move mm-hmm. and run. So, you know, if you have a couple, two or three good passes, you should be able to have a nice lane to do a thunderous dunk or take a bunch of three-pointers. Obviously, a four-point shot in that circle, if you're touching any part of it, opens up opportunities and things like that. So that's all interesting and potentially fun. I'm concerned about the players. These are older players.
Right.
And I don't mean I'm concerned about the players in the real world. I mean, from a video game perspective,
right.
These are guys who have got a lot of miles on those legs and ankles and knees, and guys who are upwards of 30s and even in their 40s. So you very likely need to take significant license with their attributes to make the game fun.
Right.
So that's sort of the other side of the coin. I don't know what you could do. It's almost like the game either needs to be the total sim with the players sort of accurately represented, or a refreshed version of something like NBA Live or NBA Street, where these are the players. It's, you know, the Allen Iversons and the Charles Oakleys and Latrell Sprewells and Chauncey Billups and Steven Jackson, sort of hyper stylized, excellent versions of themselves, so that as a video game, you can have a lot of fun.
Right. And that's the biggest concern, I think, with the league in general is that some of these guys have been out of the league for a decade. They're older. I mean, you've got Charles Oakley as a player coach. So, I mean, like, what is this basketball going to look like? It may end up being a disaster, and then we'll say, you know what? That whole idea of it becoming a video game, yeah, that was funny. But it's intriguing, I think, possibility. So I brought up two potential routes to gaming for this league if it catches on and seems to be successful, and that's its own game where it could be like $20 or $15 as a downloadable game. You get the licensed big three courts, and you get the licensed uniforms, and you get a lot or all of these legend players. Or, and again, I think it could sell because it'd be summer and there's no other sports games that release. This league takes place between June and August, and you go from MLB The Show at the end of March to late August with Madden, with nothing essentially. So it has potential there. Or it could be folded into an NBA 2K or an NBA Live, where they make that part of their product as a separate mode, or like NBA 2K did with college basketball teams, integrate it into their story mode. And with 2K, they even have guys like Allen Iverson already under contract, appearing in classic teams and appearing in their My Team building mode. So I think there's a couple possibilities if this big three does actually become successful, that it could be implemented.
Oh, sure. Lots of possibilities. And I think basketball fans would almost enjoy the sort of a throwback, hyper stylized version of it, as opposed to a simulation version of it.
You're probably right.
I think it would be a tough sell as a standalone game, not necessarily because the sports calendar is void in summer, but just because the video game market is so crowded with so much quality.
Yeah, but
I think it would be very hard as a standalone.
If you've got the likes of Allen Iverson and you're putting them on a cover or doing commercials with them, I think there's potential there as opposed to an unlicensed game, which I think tends to struggle in that scenario.
Oh, there's always potential, right? Yeah. I'm not going to dismiss it either way. It's just a challenge, right? Generating awareness and then getting people the golden the holy grail is conversion, right? It's one thing to make people aware of the game. That's hard enough. It's another thing to get them to convert and pay the $10 or the $20 or the $40 or the $60. And I just don't know that it is worth the effort that it would take to incorporate this mode into either NBA 2K or an NBA Live, although I think that would be, you know, it's best chance. But again, it might get lost in the shuffle. It's a very interesting question. I think we've certainly heard more than anecdotal evidence of people longing for a new version of NBA Street.
Oh, sure.
And it's almost like if you could take the Big Three concept and then put the sort of MVP versions of all of these players in place and sort of have a fantasy kind of feel to what is a technically licensed real game, to me that sort of feels like its best chance for success if it were to ultimately be made into a video game.
Yeah, and for a league looking for exposure, having got dynamic players, dynamic gameplay, making the league seem exciting would definitely be a positive for them too.
100%.
Well, hey everybody, right before we get to the segment with the guys from Disc Jam, and it is great, you're going to love it, I want to take just another moment and thank another one of tonight's great sponsors, Audible. You know, do you love books, but you find that you never have time to read them? Well, with Audible, get audiobooks and listen to those books that you've been meaning to read on the go. Their app is free, and it works on iPhones, iPad, Androids, and Windows phones. And you can also download and listen on your Kindle Fire and over 500 MP3 players. You know, with Audible, you own your books. Now, this is really interesting. So you can access your books anytime and anywhere right from your smartphone. But not only that, they've got the great listen guarantee. So if you decide you don't like the book you choose, no worries. You can exchange any book you aren't happy with for another title anytime, no questions asked. That's pretty amazing. That's like old school book, you know, libraries and bookstore kind of stuff. But with digital, it's kind of amazing. And, you know, it's funny. I drive like 5 hours, 6-7 hours a week. And so Audible has become a lifesaver to me. I've got a long commute. And, you know, with my commute now, I just let the traffic crawl while my pulse races listening to a great book. And if you got a new commute or an old commute, doesn't matter. Just grab a seat and then hang on to the edge of it. You can't make more time, but you can make the most of it. So turn your commute into something more with a free trial at Audible. They have got so many great books. I'm actually finally wrapping up the Harry Potter series. It took me years, but I started using Audible, and I banged through the last three books in just a few days. So go to audible.com/pressrow to start now. And again, you're supporting the Press Row podcast, which we really appreciate. Go to audible.com/pressrow. Those clicks matter. The more that you support our sponsors, the more that we get to do the Press Row podcast. So once again, go to audible.com/pressrow and start now.
All right, we've got Timothy Rapp and Jay Mattis with us. They're the duo behind Disc Jam. It's a game that's generated a lot of great word of mouth, and it's available now on PS4 and PC. Those with PlayStation Plus actually get Disc Jam for free before the store updates with April's new set of games. After that, it'll be the regular $15 price. So thanks a lot for taking the time out. I know you've been busy to come on the Press Row podcast and talk about the game. You two literally make up the entirety of the development team, if I understand this correctly, at High Horse Entertainment. So how did that come about?
Yeah, we do indeed. It was, we worked together at Activision at Treyarch on Call of Duty. We actually missed each other by a few games. My first studio was Treyarch for Call of Duty 3, and that was my first job in the industry. And then Jay came on a couple years later for World at War, actually, so one game after that. And then I've actually been Activision had me over on Guitar Hero with Neversoft to help out with Tony Hawk and Guitar Hero because they had just started doing the Guitar Hero games. So we just missed each other, and then we came back to work together for Black Ops 2 and 3. And then, you know, we got along really well. We're both kind of loud, outspoken people, and we're also not turned off by that type of personality. So, like, it kind of worked that we could be mean to each other and still get along and work fast and work well together. And, you know, and then we actually left at separate times. You know, Jay had been working on Call of Duty for the better part of his 20s. And after about 10 years in the business and 10 years in the, you know, about 11 for me, we both kind of, you know, I had an opportunity to go do some contracting work and start spinning up my own stuff. And Jay had done the same thing about a year earlier. And so we started talking, and we're like, well, shoot, we're both kind of trying to do the same thing. We're both trying to build our own stuff. We have a lot of complementary. We both were engineers and doing online gameplay for our career. But, Jay was focused a lot on just all kinds of technology and the breadth of technology. And I was focusing a lot on just art pipeline and just everything from concept to sculpt to animation. And the two of us had been in our spare time studying up and trying to get as good as we could at a lot of things that were complementary skill sets to each other. You know, I'd been doing so much technology stuff at work. I hadn't been digging so much into, you know, all the cool tech that I wasn't making myself a better engineer in my spare time. I was trying to make myself a better artist. And Jay was making himself, a world-class engineer in his spare time. So when we started talking about like the kind of things we could build together, it was a no-brainer. We basically was like, oh man, let's just do this right now. So we formed High Horse Entertainment, partnered up and started contracting as a duo. And in the meantime, we were building sort of technology for fast-paced arcade style sports games. Like we started building the network platform for games like Disc Jam. Disc Jam is obviously our first game as a company, but the whole thing that we were building leading into this game is the network platform that's going to allow us to build super snappy, responsive arcade style games. And that's kind of what the whole sort of vision for the company is.
Yeah. How about you just go about explaining the general concept of Disc Jam for those who maybe aren't familiar with it already?
Sure. So it's basically air hockey meets tennis. If anybody's ever played like Windjammers and Mario Tennis and NBA Jam kind of all mixed together with like elements of Lethal League also kind of thrown in. It's sort of just like a Pong. It's one of the Pong-likes. You know, I don't know if that's a coin term, but like in the sort of time we've been telling people about the game, we've sort of labeling it the genre of Pong-like, where essentially it's a juiced up game of Pong. You can catch and throw the kind of the game object. Object is basically to get the disc behind somebody or make the disc hit the ground. So there's singles and doubles, 1v1, 2v2, and it's really just a super fast-paced, really accessible, only four buttons version of Pong, where you just want to the core movement's important, the snappy responsive controls are important, and it really becomes a game of just both execution and strategy. So that's kind of what we wanted to do. We wanted to have it be an accessible title that you could pick up and play and understand all of the mechanics, just like arcade games of the 90s we all kind of grew up on, where it's like you can pick up and play the mechanics instantly. You kind of like a Mario sports game. You can digest everything in NBA Jam in about 30 seconds. You kind of know everything that's there. But the depth can be found in the layers of gameplay and making it, a balanced skill game where, your skill ceiling is really high and the how good you can get at it is really quite where you introduce sort of the depth, we think.
Was Disc Jam the first idea you guys had? Were you bouncing things off each other, or was this just like naturally came about?
Originally, we were sort of working on a more deep, sort of a longer term project that was a totally different genre, also multiplayer. We were working on the networking technology, like Tim said, we were also talking to Epic Games, who makes Unreal Engine 4, which powers Disc Jam, and they were coming to Indiecade, which is local for us because it's in Southern California, and they were saying, hey, your networking technology is pretty cool, how's that game going, we wish you'd have something to show. And it was right about this time that we had just recently, had a whole session at Tim's place where we were just sort of, drinking beers, playing games, and we played like every 90s arcade game. And the vast majority of them were sort of in this Pong-like genre. And, it had already been occurring to us that, I think that we should do a much, much smaller scoped thing, so that we can build out all of this technology, as well as find out, we were really curious what we could actually do as a two-man team. Mm-hmm. I think the project they were working on, it was a much more traditional, like, okay, let's make this demo and then maybe let's pitch it to publishers and then sort of make a bigger studio. And we were having a lot of fun working just the two of us. And so we were sort of curious, like, what if we just made something that was a lot smaller, made something that would allow us to build all this stuff out, but still make a fun game in the process and figure out exactly, where the limits are of doing a two-man team. So we decided to sort of do Disc Jam based on that. And so, you know, we told Epic, hey, you know what? IndieCade was in 8 weeks. So we were like, how about if we send you a trailer in 4 weeks? And if you think it looks good enough to show, we'll see you there with a game in 8. So that's what we did. And so the first time we ever showed Disc Jam was at IndieCade in October 2015. And it was just, you know, 2 months of development.
Working half-time, but we were still half-time, Jake.
Oh,
we were contracting at that point.
And wait a second, before we go any further, so not only are you building the game, but you made a trailer. So you also have video graphics.
And that took an immense amount of time.
We absolutely don't. We do not have those skills. That is
all of our skills are whatever After Effects knowledge I could pick up in the, you know, like 10 minutes that I have in the day that I'm not programming.
The trailer was just like, here's some gameplay with
bad.
a song laid over it. I've like removed all traces of it from the internet. I had to send one takedown request. Everybody, you know, most people were like, cool, like, just, you know, that trailer was 4 weeks into this project, literally from scratch did absolutely nothing to Disc Jam in 8 weeks. The 4 weeks mark is when we sent that trailer over, so it was bad. I mean, it was bad, but like, we needed something to kind of show what the game was going to be. And so I got rid of all the traces of it on the internet, but there was one website, and I won't mention it here, but like, the dude wanted money to take it down. And it's like, he's like, how dare you ask me to use our resources to take this trailer down? Like, it was like, he had to like, acting as if he had to like hire somebody to come take, you know, remove a video off his YouTube page. And we're like, listen, man, all right, well, this is our material. We never said you could use it anyway. We never, like, the whole thing said like our property. We never really actually licensed it out for people. Like, we didn't say, like, just because it's on our YouTube channel did not give someone the right to like download it and post it on their channel. And that's like what this guy did. And we're like, we didn't really care at the time. So yeah, whatever. It's one more person sharing it. It's not going to hurt us. But when we wanted to get rid of it, he asked for money to get rid of it. So we were like, all right, well, here's your DMCA. I'm sorry, but like, this is just, this is a fair use situation now.
It's funny when you're on the other side of those kind of conversations, isn't it?
Right. You know, it's like, dude,
never in a million years did we ever think we would find ourselves on that end of the conversation, to be quite honest. You know, and it was like, look, you know, we got this updated trailer. You know, it's like, you don't even necessarily have to take that one down, but at least like put the new one up and say like, hey, like, this is the, you know, whatever, you know, backlink it, something, right?
Yeah.
But just now.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you guys both said you came from the big studio. I mean, there's hardly anything bigger than Call of Duty, right? So what are some of the things that you love about being an independent developer?
Well, I think the speed. I think movement is just like there's one check and balance. It's like, we run things by each other. Jay will check in some code and be like, hey, jump in. We change lobs. Let's figure out the lob changes better. Or like, I'll throw together some art and slap it in, like, hey, does this look stupid? And then like, it's just yes, no, that works, this doesn't, okay, next. And then we're just iterating so fast on stuff that you know, that's how this is able to get done in a year and a half. Like, I mean, I feel like, you know, we want to, you know, get bigger and make this thing a little bit more, like, increase our throughput, so to speak. But at the same time, it's like, it just reminds me of all the times where it's like things get lost in communication. And, you know, a big part of me feels like if we added people, things would actually slow down. You know, we have to be adding the right people for things to actually speed up. So, I mean, when Jay and I are just, you know, Jay and I are in very similar places lifestyle-wise. You know, our significant others don't seem to mind that we, like, made a disgusting giant desk out into our living room. We're both working 7 days a week, like, round-the-clock hour. Jay's up at 6. I go to bed about 5. And, like, so it's like we're both sort of just, you know, kind of entrenched in this madness of getting this game done in a year and a half. And, you know, I feel like that's been great. You know, it's like, we just, no one on earth understands what I'm going through besides Jay, and like, vice versa. Like, no matter how much people in our lives are like, yeah, like, no, yeah, I hear you're working really hard. It's like, you don't even understand what you're talking about right now. You say that. It's like, you know, it's like, hey man, do you want to like come get a drink on Thursday? And it's just like, that question makes me angry at somebody. I'm like, how dare you?
15 Thursdays from now, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, Jay and I laugh about that a lot. It's just like, can you, and like, you know, you put all this work into it, you know, you just grind yourself so hard, like multiple all-nighters, like crazy nights of just like, this has to get done. And then like, you know, you jump on, like, you wake up to check your email in the morning, you get like 4 or 5 hours of sleep, wake up, check your email, and it's just like 1/3 of the communications you get are people just hammering you for something, and it's like, oh my god. It's just like you build a lot of character.
I think that's a really good point though, in terms of like, I think the same thing that we like about being indie is probably what also gets us into trouble, which is like the way that I describe you know, working in AAA, which is and this is not at all a criticism of Activision or Treyarch, because I think every single big creative endeavor, even outside of games, is the same way, which is that, you know, when you've got like 200 plus people and you're trying to make something that's a creative product, there's no way to go around the fact that at the end of the day, it's going to be whatever 200 people don't find objectionable, which is like not the same thing as something that like two guys really like, you know. And when you're Call of Duty, that's something you got to think about a lot, right? Like, if you make the game like markedly better, but it's for, you know, this 20% of people who like a certain type of game, and 80% of those other people like it a little bit less, that may not be worth it, you know. And that's something that's a really careful consideration that you have to do anytime you're changing something that's like a franchise with a 10-year history. Mm. And so being able to get free of that baggage, A, but B, just even have a smaller team, you know, we're able to do things that are just like, okay, Tim and I think alike on a lot of things, and we both like this, so this is the way it's going to be. You know, and we may find that the vast majority of people disagree with us, which is, I think, gets us into trouble sometimes. But at the same time, from a creative point of view, I think it's really satisfying, because it's at least what we wanted to do. And then maybe we change our minds once we realize how people react to certain things. But
and I will, you know, say this, there is something holy. I've never felt the level of satisfaction you do feel when people respond positively to something, because there's just no one else to get. I mean, like, there's nobody else involved in this besides Jay and I, and then we added a contract artist. We added a very talented contract artist, you know, at halftime a couple months back to kind of ease the burden of some of the art creation. But, you know, like, when somebody has a positive response to the game and is understanding of like the narrow and maybe small scope of it, it's just so rewarding, because it's like, we've got guys who just are so passionate about the game, and to know that, you know, it's just like something that we built up kind of out of nothing for someone to enjoy that much. I mean, people got hundreds of hours in this thing, more than Jay and I. And like, that's just so rewarding. So you're like, dude, I love that they love it, because we only built this because we wanted something that we wanted to play. And that's going to be how we do everything in this company. It's like, we're going to build stuff that we want to play, because we're online PvP guys. It's our favorite and pretty much only way we play video games. And, you know, there's a rare game that gets me off of like MP. You know what I mean? I'll probably play Breath of the Wild and love that, and there'll be an occasional game here and there where I'll play the single player and love it. But like, Jay and I are just such MP PvP guys that like, that's the kind of stuff we're going to be building. And when someone's like, dude, I don't need AI, I don't need this, this game is like totally speaks to me, I love it, like, that's so rewarding, because it's like, yeah, like we were able to deliver something to somebody who was really interested in it, and that feels very, very nice.
So for every new opportunity and new reward that going independent from the big AAA studio presents, there are also challenges, right? So what are some of the biggest challenges that you faced as you moved from being part of a very large, quote-unquote, secure video game studio, although we all know there's no such thing as a secure video game studio,
exactly,
to the you know, to the world of you're creating your own company, you're making your own decisions, you're making your own money, and everything is in your hands. What are some of the biggest challenges you face from becoming an indie developer?
Well, I would say that, you know, well, number one obviously is just paying rent, right? That's something you don't think about when you're making Call of Duty and someone's, you know, paying your bills for you. It's like, you know, it's a lot easier to make creative decisions when you're not
health insurance.
Yeah, when you're not worried about paying the bills. So,
well, you know, there's nothing happening. Awesome. Nothing happening in the world of health insurance right now. You need to be concerned
right.
about it at all.
Right. No, that's smooth sailing. All that stuff, smooth sailing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, like, that's certainly number one. I think that can definitely put some pressure on the creative process. You know, I think we were fairly fortunate in that. We were able to land some good contracting gigs, and we worked on Disc Jam for a while, Halftime, and that was actually really nice. Those days were pretty nice because you were working on it half time and you didn't really have any deadlines for the stuff you were working on. And it was like, you know, it was just very free. And it was like, whatever I got done, I got done. And it was all fun stuff. I think towards the end, where we're getting stretched pretty thin and we're trying to get stuff out and, you know, we're trying to make sure it's got everything that it needs. You know, because I think the other thing that you take for granted when you're on a big team is that there's a lot of tedious work that goes into not necessarily making a game, but finishing a game.
The buttoning up of yeah, just, like, the process.
Like, and I think everyone, you know, it's said fairly often in game dev, you know, that the last 10% is 90%. But it really is. And, you know, you find that by the end of the project, everything that you have left on your plate that you need to do is like all of the stuff that's either really rough to do or really tedious and everything that you put off till the very end. And so, like, just sort of slogging through that right at the end, especially when you're probably at your most exhausted of working on the project. You know, that's tricky because you just don't have anyone else, right? It's like a two-man team, and, like, you know, we gotta do it. There's no one else that, like, sort of, oh, well, like, we'll push this sort of tedious stuff around on the team so everyone does a little bit. Like, there's none of that. You just gotta do it all. And I think, you know, I took that a little bit for granted on the bigger projects because we would spread that kind of stuff around. So
yeah, because that's actually a good point, Jay, because, like, on the bigger projects, when you have a strong team and there's a handful of tasks that could be handled by a group of people on that team. So it's like, you know what, like, this unexpected things always come up. And when they do, and you're the guy for the unexpected thing, you're like, okay, this thing, I got this thing, I'm going to smoke this. But you got, like, a couple days that's going to take you out because you got to fix something that's, like, a critical bug that's going to, like, impact a very big system that you're in charge of. Kind of the lesser items on your list can be siphoned off to other people. And, like, production does a really good job of, you know, getting things done for a way that you'd have to think about it. It's like, hey, I'm MIA for 2 days now getting this critical thing fixed. Make sure somebody gets on top of a grenade and they, you know, someone else on the team can handle grenades for the next 2 days and make sure that these fixes. Like, when it's just the two of us, it's like, I mean, I remember pulling an all-nighter like 4 or 5 days before ship, and I realized at like 9 a.m. the next morning that, like, oh, you know what? We have to finish all of our flags. And, like, flags are something that I never imagined how impactful these stupid flag icons would be. I get so many emails from people calling me a racist for not some flag in here, and, like, saying, like, how dare you overlook this country? And it's like, I grew up in an American public school, man. I don't know anything about geography. So, like, I'm just trying to, like, you know, so, like, you know, one morning it's like, I'll sit there. I had to just get 60 something flags in there. And I think I just looked at a few other games and took an idea of, like, what countries are kind of common, and then through, you know, just any flag that was, like, on those lists, I just, like, okay, let me go get this. But yeah, talk about tedious, like, just adding 60 emblems, then making sure they're all named properly, making sure, like, every string matches up, and then, like, the image is it's just, oh gosh, like, things like that where it's like, man, this is not even close to interesting, and it's so time consuming, and I have not slept in so long. This is a nightmare right now, but stuff like that, you know, whatever.
So I haven't had many conversations about Disc Jam with people where Rocket League isn't immediately mentioned. So how much or how little did the success of Rocket League or other games, you know, that you wanted to mention propel you in making and marketing Disc Jam?
Well, you know, it's actually like one of the things that was awesome about Rocket League coming out when it did is we had already started production on Disc Jam. Like, we had just got down the path of, like, let's make a PvP only, MP only, like, arcade game online. Let's make one of these Pong-like games that we love. It's just got a modern feature set. It's got leaderboards and invites and parties and all the typical feature set you expect of a next-gen game, but, you know, on this sort of a very simple 90s arcade style game. Like, when we made that call, Rocket League hadn't come out yet. Rocket League came out like a month or two later, and we were like, it was so validating because we didn't know at the time that it would be something that consumers could, you know, get behind. Mm-hmm. Because, like, there wasn't a lot of MP-centric games. Like, there wasn't a lot of.
And Tim and I had a big conversation about this at the time. We were playing the games and we're like, you know, this is what I want. I just want, like, you know, where are these old 90s arcade games that are just one stick, four buttons, but, like, you know, have all of the, like, where's that, but with the modern feature set of all the, you know, online stuff that typical games have today of ranked and, you know, like these leaderboards and all that stuff. And there was that conversation of, like, well, maybe there's a good reason that doesn't exist. Like, maybe we're the only ones that want that. I don't know. Yeah. You know, and so, you know, it's like you feel like there aren't many games that don't exist that someone would want, frankly. Yeah. I mean, it's like a pretty saturated market almost everywhere at this point. So it's like, you know, it definitely gave us pause because you're like, I don't know, like maybe these don't sell. Maybe no one wants this. And then Rocket League came out. And I remember downloading it on PS Plus and not knowing what it was. I hadn't played in the beta or anything like that. And I played it, and I like called up Tim right away, and I was like, hey, download this game, play Rocket League. If this isn't successful, then there's no market for this.
Yeah.
And if there is, then we're fine.
And it took us like 5 minutes playing that game to be like, oh my God, it's so good. And so, like,
and yeah, obviously it blew up, and I was like, okay, good. Then I'm not like crazy.
And so then, like, it obviously informed a bit of our kind of it informed a bit of our sort of beliefs about, you know, when and how things like this could happen. Because one thing you got to remember about Rocket League is that none of the games press touched Rocket League until it came out and got big. And, like, it's one of those things where you just kind of have to make them notice you by virtue of your sort of size and attention you're getting independently. Mm-hmm. Because I talked to some journalists who were like, yeah, you know, I ignored Rocket League too. I got those emails. Psyonix sent plenty of press releases, and I ignored the fact that game was coming out. And then, like, finally it comes out and gets so big that it finally started getting traction on some of these bigger sites.
Yeah, it's just like too big to ignore, you know?
Yeah, and so it's like, you know, the MP games, especially like the indie MP kind of vibe games, is like definitely one that probably doesn't get the attention it deserves, but Rocket League sort of was able to kind of shatter that ceiling. It was just really kind of affirming for what we were doing. That being said, you know, like, the scope of Rocket League compared to us is insane. I mean, like, if you count the fact that Rocket League is a sequel and their first game came out, you know, 6 years prior on PlayStation 2 or 3, whatever it was, PlayStation 3, I think, that's a 6 year project with a dozen to two dozen developers, well-established studio with, you know, probably funding, I assume. I don't really know the business operations over at Psyonix, but, like, you know, you talk about that over the course of 6 years, dozens of developers compared to Disc Jam with two developers in a year and a half and no budget, like $0 of budget. It's just such a different comparison. Like, obviously the comparisons are there because A, we launched on a PS Plus, we're PvP centric, and there's some things from Rocket League that just work so well for games like this that, like, you know, we do a lot of the similar quick chat kind of stuff, you know what I mean? But just, it's just one of those comparisons that's an obvious one, but it's just, I tell Jay, like, I don't like the comparison because it's such an unfair one, but at the same time, it's also probably the biggest compliment you can give our game if it's meant in the sense that, like, when we see someone says, I haven't had this much fun since Rocket League, it's, like, incredibly heartwarming because, for me, Rocket League is, like, the game of the year, game of my last decade, maybe. Like, Rocket League's one of my favorite games that's ever come out, ever. I still play that. It's, like, it's probably the first game I play in the rare instance I get a chance to play a game. I love it so much. And so when I hear someone say that, it's, like, my favorite thing in the world. But when I hear a reviewer say, like, this game thinks it's the next Rocket League and it's not, it's like, well, okay, well, we never said that. And it's like a completely tall order. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not, it's right. Not a valid comparison. Like, there's games like Video Ball, which is super fun, by the way, if anybody hasn't played Video Ball. Like, there's games like Video Ball that are similar in scope.
Our buddies from Iron Galaxy made that game. It's an excellent game.
Yeah, it's a super fun game. And, like, that's a more apt comparison in terms of just, like, size and scope of a project for an indie team. You know, but, like, again, it's something that to even be set aside, you know, again, what I consider, like, the game of the year is just, it's a very, very flattering comparison. It's just also, I don't know how much it helps us versus hurting us. Like, if you go see a movie and you're expecting it to be a 10 and you walk in there and it's like a 7, you're like, that movie's a 5. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's kind of, I want to, like, manage expectations a little bit.
So, yeah, sticking on kind of the Rocket League subject here, two big factors in its success that I'd like to hear your plans kind of or how you viewed those things and what you have envisioned for Disc Jam. two big things for Rocket League were its post-release support, which it continues to roll out even almost 2 years later, and esports, where it's become one of the bigger games in that space. And it seems like a natural fit for Disc Jam. Did you have that in mind early on? Is that something you're looking at doing going forward?
Well, so, you know, at Call of Duty, we worked on a bunch of the competitive features for that. And through that, we got to know a lot of what esports players are looking for in a game in terms of, you know, as much symmetry as possible, no randomness, obviously no rubber banding, things like that. As well as, you know, a lot of the features that they look for when you're, like, shoutcasting matches and stuff like that. That was certainly the goal from the very beginning with Disc Jam was, you know, we knew that the accessibility point was there because it was like, okay, it's, you know, one stick and it's a couple buttons, fine. And so the challenge for us always from day one was, okay, our goal with this is to try to take that skill cap and make it as high as possible and make sure that there's as much depth as humanly possible without hurting that for initial accessibility. And so that was always the challenge for us and something that we were nervous about. And so we put a lot of time into that. And as a result, all of those competitive features in terms of ranked and having these tournaments and ladders and all that stuff has definitely always been on the roadmap for us. And we actually shipped about a month earlier than we were originally planning due to just the way that scheduling had to work out, which is, you know, losing 4 weeks when you're a two-man team and you got a year and a half is that's a lot.
Yeah, that was a big, especially a lot
of especially a lot of stuff that I think was important. When you look at the reviews, it's unfortunate because I think a lot of the things that people hit on is like, well, if it had these things, it'd be different. You know, we're all things that I think we would have gotten to. You know, to your point is that, you know, we're doing it now. And so, I mean, we'll be updating this for as long as, you know, people are interested in playing it, frankly. You know, to that end, we have skill-based matchmaking, and that is actually has been like stealth turned on already. Actually,
we haven't told anybody that yet, so we can debut that news. We can debut that news on your show here. We
love it.
Activated skill-based matchmaking. So now your matches will be against people of your caliber, and as you're winning and losing those matches, it'll start matching you closer and closer to people of your skill levels. So that's been on for a couple of days now, as we sort of just keep an eye on it, make sure it's working.
As of a few days ago, that's on, and we're, you know, we're still playing with it and tuning in. That's why we haven't been super public about it, because we're trying to make sure that, you know, it's always a balance between how good your matches are and how long you're waiting, right, and all that stuff. So, you know, we're trying to get that exactly right. And as we move forward, we'll be tuning that even more. You know, our next patch, the goal for our next patch here is to have a stats page where you can see sort of, you know, your wins and your skill rating and your, you know, how many, you know, your ratio of essentially like perfect throws to the rest of your throws, as well as, you know, just like assists, you know, all the kind of stats that you'd expect to see. And then to have associated leaderboards so you can look at, you know, your the top, you know, 100 or 20 or whatever that is, people in the world, where you are relative to that, et cetera.
And your friends list versus you, right, et cetera.
So that's sort of what's next on the roadmap for us. But as we move forward, we'll be looking at, you know, the sort of full-blown competitive ranked modes and stuff like that, as well as seeing how we can integrate, you know, tournaments natively, whether there's a place for that. And then just, you know, in general, looking at other features like some additional fun modes, AI and bots to practice against. And then we have a lot of content going forward for maps and characters and skins.
Yeah, and then as far as content, you know, that part's really easy to scale up. You know, a big part of this last month, especially when we lost the last, you know, we're basically targeting April, mid-April. But, you know, without getting into the particulars of it, it was important that we hit this March release. So, you know, we were happy to get everything done in time. We were happy to get through our certifications and everything was, you know, everything came delivered on schedule. But you know, I think once you find like by about mid-April, a lot of those things that were planned for ship, are pretty much ready to roll. I think we're in the next few days here, we're going to be launching that patch with the skill-based matchmaking and stats display, and then we've got some sort of want to give a little bit more. Give a little bit more love to the people requesting offline features. Mm-hmm. I think it's safe to say we miscalculated how much people care about things like offline play and trophies, things like that. It's just something that's so important to myself and not to speak for Jay, but it's like it's all about MP for us, and we probably had our blinders on a little bit in that regard. Like, oh, whatever, who cares about bots? but it's one of those things that we get asked about so frequently that it's obviously a big priority for us now. And then
just to add to that, at the end of the day, the problem is like, again, even with bots, like we have those things and we have them internally that we use for testing, but they just they weren't quite ready and polished for release. And just like, and at the end of the day, we have to prioritize all this stuff. And so that was really the problem, is like, especially when you have to ship a month early, it's like, okay, well, look, like bots, who cares? That can come online later, and these things. And it's just one of those things where there's only so much time in the day. And, and I think especially like Tim said, we've gotten slammed a little bit from some people, especially in the trophy hunting communities, of like, our trophies are not great and they seem a little lazy. And I think that's fair. And they are, but they got sort of prioritized lower because it's like, the game working online and being fun and matchmaking being solid and all those things were more important. And so, it's unfortunate. That's sort of the way that game development goes. And you just, if we had our way, games would never be done. And I think you can always be adding more to it and making it better. And it's really hard. You really have to force yourself to get out of that mode of like it being your baby and you wanting it to be perfect before everyone sees it and plays it, because you'll never ship like that.
That's kind of how we used to do it, right? Like, our whole background is doing it that way. Like, we wouldn't go to a show with a Call of Duty build without a few weeks of like added crunch to get ready for the show, debuting such polished finished work. And this is the first project we've ever been on where it's like, we let this thing public playtest start in pre-alpha stage, where it was like so much work had to be done. So many key mechanics were overhauled and revamped and reworked, and so many things had changed. But like, that was key to Disc Jam getting to the point where like, hey, you know what? Even our bad reviews are talking about, damn, this game's fun. I wish they had more stuff in here. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, our worst reviews are like, this is so fun. I'm really disappointed that this is missing or that's missing. And that's actually fine, because it's fair, and it's something that's on the way, and it's something that's a very fair criticism for the things that like, aren't in there now that people want.
Right. Fixable.
Yeah, and also, something that we can like deliver on. If the game wasn't fun, we can't fix that post launch. If the game hadn't got to a fun
if the
position,
reviews say, I don't know what these guys were thinking, because like, there's nothing about this concept that's fun, it's like, well, you can't fix that.
It's time to shut her down and get on the game too. But right. Like, the fact that all of our like our most negative reviews are like, this is fun, but A, B, and C is missing, those things are things that we kind of expected to have happen. And, to be frank, like, the reviews have been better than we anticipated at ship. We were kind of down on the fact that, like, we're like, man, this is going to be rough.
So other than PlayStation Plus, which obviously gives you some digital shelf space that is really incredibly valuable, what are your strategies for reaching people and letting them discover your game? What are your tactics in the near term and the long term?
So we've got some pretty nice promotions lined up with some big YouTube channels, Twitch streamers, and where we're just going to sort of the main thing is we want to get PC stronger, because our entire pre-release community was on PC, and these guys are the ones who helped us shape the game and make it as fun as it is. And we, it's just so hard to get someone to buy something on Steam for full price. Our sales were going great during the launch week sale.
I know a little something about that.
The minute it became full price, it was like, all right, well, we're on a ton of wish lists right now. Like, the indications are our Steam reviews are like at 91-92%. We're on a lot of wish lists, and our sales were going great during the launch week sale. And so we have enough indicators that like, okay, like, well, we need to land a good promotion where it's like, maybe it's a free weekend, and we also align that with some, you know, one of these streamers who wants to do a feature of our game. He's got a huge audience. And so, like, maybe we align those things together, and all of a sudden, like, there's a double XP, or, like, you know, a double Jamolian earn rate weekend with double earn rate, and it's a free weekend, and we're doing a big feature on a massive channel. Like, so, like, we have some things lined up like that where it's like, okay, that should help people get into it on the PC community. Because once people get in, they dig it. Like, that's like, also, you know, we don't have the marketing budget to be like, hey, IGN, cover us. I don't know if that costs money, but I feel like it does. But I don't know if it does or doesn't. But, like, it's one of those things that whatever marketing money goes to, whatever marketing ad spend goes to, whatever marketers, whatever you pay a marketing person, whatever the hell they actually do, I still don't know. Whatever they do, whatever that money would go to, like, we didn't have. So PlayStation Plus was massive for that.
Right. Like, you may realize that one of the reasons we don't know what the money goes to is because we didn't have it anyway. So just need to really look into it.
Yeah. So, like, we had no reason to look into that. But yeah, so, like, you know, once people get in, though, the majority response has been super positive. So, like, just getting people in is going to be the challenge. So if we find we've got some creative ideas to get people in. Once they're in, we like Jay said before, we want to focus on these things that are biggest low hanging fruit requests. Things like offline modes, things that people can practice against bots, and things that make it more accessible to new players. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a get in there and get wrecked kind of thing. Like, it's not super accessible to brand new players other than the kind of tutorial. You're kind of on your own there. So we want to kind of clean that up a little bit. That's coming in the next few weeks. And then after that, it's like, okay, now let's really, really focus hard on partnerships to get exposure and get people in. Because once they're in, we're pretty confident they're going to enjoy and stick around for at least a little while. You know, so that's kind of our strategy at the moment.
So I want to give you guys one opportunity here. Just make a final pitch to everyone out there. Why should they give Disc Jam a shot?
So here's a couple things that I can promise. We will be building this thing for as long as people are playing. We have a healthy concurrency right now on the consoles. We're building our PC one up every day, and we're going to have opportunities to build them up. And as we speak, we know that the most important asks are about, you know, matchmaking, concurrency, and, you know, crossplay and those kind of things. And Jay and I are making a lot of headway on those fronts. So, you know, I understand people with the sentiment of this isn't ready for prime time, or like, yeah, call me when it's ready. You know, all that attitude, I understand. The reason you should give Disc Jam a chance is if you haven't played it, jump in there, and I guarantee you you'll find some fun in there. I cannot believe there's people who are like, oh, this is, I've so infrequently seen someone pick it up and say, well, this really is not for me. That so rarely happens. I'm not trying to speak with a huge ego here. That's just true from all the shows we've done, be it a pick up and play at like PSX or IndieCade or E3. It's just one of those games, like, we won at E3, we won audience top choice at the event we were at. It's just one of those things that if people give it a chance, almost uniform response is, oh, this is actually quite fun. I did not expect this to be as fun as it is. And that's what I want people just to give it a chance, and you might find out that it's actually a lot deeper and more fun than appears on the surface.
Also, here's my pitch, which is a lot simpler, which is this, which is our game is ultra simple, and waiting to see if it becomes a thing is sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And if you just pick it up, our game's one of those games, if you're not having fun within those first 2 hours that Steam allows you to refund, you could just refund it. I won't be offended. Like, pick it up, play it. I guarantee you'll find a match, you'll have fun, and if you don't, you'll definitely know within the first 2 hours. So, you know, it's almost risk-free in that way, as long as, you know, you're not too lazy to request the refund. But I would definitely, you know, give it a shot. It's one of those things where, you know, similar to Rocket League, it's a little bit hard to pitch, where you say, like, you know, oh, it's soccer with cars, and everyone goes, yeah, pass. You know, so, you know, if you think that it's the style of game that might be for you, just give it a shot. You know,
simpler than my pitch. How was that simpler than my pitch?
Because you lacked a whole list of promises. All those promises, I also guarantee. If it helps.
Fair enough.
Well, Tim and Jay, thanks again for coming on. That was great. Again, the game is Disc Jam. I've really enjoyed it. I reviewed it for Sporting News. You can check out my review there. There's a lot of potential, I think, for it to grow over time. So make sure you guys check it out. It's on PS4, has been mentioned, free with PlayStation Plus for another 2 weeks or so. And then it's also available on PC through Steam. So thanks again, guys. And for everyone else,
yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. For everyone else out there, thanks for listening this week to the Press Roll Podcast.